Acts chapter 26, and we ended talking about verse 4 through 8, but let's reread those and move forward from there. If you remember, let me reset the stage. So Paul was arrested in Jerusalem. The Sanhedrin tried to kill him, even though they couldn't find him guilty in their initial thing. If you'll remember, Paul brought up the resurrection of the dead, and they began to argue among themselves, kind of forgot he was there, and it ended up leading to him not being arrested, not being punished by them, but he was still held in custody. And then they tried to kill, a group of them tried to kill him, and so the Roman centurion decided to take him to Caesarea, Caesarea Maritime, where Felix was the governor, and where he lived. And Caesarea Maritime is where the governor had lived since Pilate had lived there, and now Felix lived there. And if you'll remember, Felix didn't find him guilty, but he held him in custody for 18 months and kept talking to him back and forth. So Paul's been in custody for over 18 months. And then Festus becomes the new governor. And Festus hears the case. He doesn't quite know what to do with him. And but after, you know, he's only been governor for a couple of weeks. And so Agrippa, who Herod Agrippa II, who was the ruler of the northern part of Palestine at that time, in what we call Galilee and Samaria and Syria. He ruled that whole northern region, but again had been raised as a Jew. And so Herod Agrippa came to the palace there to celebrate with Festus being the new governor. And so Festus asked Agrippa to sit in judgment and kind of help him with his decision. Now, Festus had already again decided Paul was innocent. So he's been found innocent twice in the proceedings, but he's still being held. And now he's got Agrippa, and remember, Paul had appealed to Caesar. So Festus is going to send him to Rome to be on trial there, but he doesn't know how to write up even the charges because he couldn't find anything that Paul was guilty of. And so he asked Agrippa to help him do that. So that's where we pick up. They started a lot of flowery speech, both from the government officials and from Paul. And then we find here in chapter 26, verse 4, is where we left off the last section we talked about. So let's pick up there. The Jews all know the way I have lived. And ever since I was a child, from the beginning of my life in my own country and also in Jerusalem. And they have known me for a long time, and they can testify, if they are willing, that according to the strictest sect of our religion, I lived as a Pharisee. And now it is because of my hope in what God has promised our fathers that I am on trial today. And this is a promise our 12 tribes are hoping to see fulfilled as they earnestly serve God day and night. O King, it is because of this hope that the Jews are accusing me. And why should any of you consider it incredible that God raises the dead? So again, going back, and Agrippa being Jewish, and Paul addresses his statements directly to him, and Paul simply says, you know, because one of the things he was accused of was blasphemy and stirring up false teaching. Well, the truth is, half of the Jewish leaders believed in the resurrection and half of them didn't. If they were a Pharisee, they believed in the resurrection. If they were a Sadducee, they didn't. The Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. And so Paul is saying, look, I was raised as a Pharisee. I am I'm not just a Jew. I'm a member. I grew up as one of the strictest group of Jews they are, studying the scriptures. And I believe in the resurrection. Of course, now, where's Paul going with that? He's going to talk about, you know, this is why I was arrested, because I've been preaching that Jesus has been resurrected, right? But he's trying to make it a theological issue for them. It's just about whether you believe in the resurrection or not. But he's trying to build his case then to talk about Jesus being resurrected. And so so he tells him this. This is the hope. This is the hope that I had. And what he's trying to go on and teach Agrippa and others is that he grew up learning of the hope of the resurrection. And now he has seen it come to pass. He has seen the Messiah. And he has seen him crucified, buried, and raised from the dead. And so that's where he is going with this. But he begins just by pointing out, you know, as a Jew, this is the hope that all 12 tribes had. This is the hope that our people have always believed in. And now it has happened, and it's because I believe what our people have always believed, that I'm being persecuted and attacked. That's how he lays the case out before Agrippa. And Agrippa would have, I don't know if Agrippa believed in the resurrection or Agrippa didn't believe in it, but he would have been familiar as a Jew with the argument and the fact that the two leading parties disagreed about that. That's how Paul lays it out to them. So any questions about verse 4 through 8? Let's look at verse 9. Verse 9, Paul says, I too was convinced that I ought to do all that was possible to oppose the name of Jesus of Nazareth. And that is just what I did in Jerusalem. On the authority of the chief priest, I put many of the saints in prison. And when they were put to death, I cast my vote against them. And many times I went from one synagogue to another to have them punished. And I tried to force them to blaspheme. And in my obsession against them, I even went to foreign cities in order to persecute them. So here Paul lays out where he was. That he had been initially opposed to Jesus. We've seen him use here in these couple of chapters the phrase the way of Christians, that he had been opposed to the church, people who believed in Jesus. And he had been, even under the authority, and it's interesting, the authority of the chief priests, the same people that are trying to kill Paul right now are the people he used to work for. And that he used to be their best agent, so to speak, out finding Christians, getting them to blaspheme, getting them arrested, and even voting for them to be killed. Of course, the only one in Scripture that talks about his involvement in who was killed is Stephen when he was stoned. And if you'll remember, it says Paul held their coats while they stoned Stephen. And so it's where Paul is saying, this is where I was. I was completely against Jesus. I couldn't have been any more against him than I was. Now, again, this is part of every one of us' story, okay? We might not have been Paul attacking the church, but every one of us were against Jesus. We had chosen to sin. We had chosen to do our own thing. We were against God. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We had rebelled against him, shook our fist in his face and said, no, God, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. I'm going to do what I want to. We were in rebellion. You know that great verse that Paul wrote in Romans 5 where he says, and this is how God demonstrated his love, that while we were yet in rebellion against God, that he sent Jesus to die for us. And so that's what we see here. We hear him describe his own rebellion. Now, you know, Paul had said, I grew up as a Jew of a Jew. and grew up in church. But you know, the truth is, I grew up a Baptist of a Baptist, right? You know, my mom was church secretary. My uncle was a Baptist pastor and an Armed Baptist chaplain. My grandfather was a deacon. My dad was a deacon. And so I grew up Baptist of the Baptist. I tell folks I didn't go there when I was born. I went there 9 months before I was breathing on my own because that's where I was there all of my life, the entirety of it. But at the same time, I had to come to a day when I realized that I was against God, that I had rebelled against Him, and that because of that, I needed salvation. And so this is that picture. Again, as we share our testimony, this is the great place to start. There was a time before I came to know Jesus. What was that life like? Okay. Now, Paul's is about as dramatic as it can be. And I don't want, and I encourage others sometimes you get around people who sowed a few oats and wild oats, and it's almost like they want to brag about how bad they were. You don't need to do that. But you need to admit that all of us have sinned, that you've sinned, and that there was a time when you didn't know God and you were against Him. And that's what Paul does here, as he describes in detail how much against them he was. Okay? So any questions about that? Well, verse 11, he ended by saying, I even went to foreign cities, and it was on one of those trips, verse 12, on one of these journeys, I was going to Damascus with the authority and the commission of the chief priest. And about noon, O king, as I was on the road, I saw a light from heaven brighter than the sun, blazing around me and my companions, and we all fell to the ground. And I heard a voice saying to me in Aramaic, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? It is hard for you to kick against the goats. So here he is. He's on his way to Damascus. He's going there to arrest Christians and throw them in jail. He has seen Stephen and his stoning and his testimony of God and looking into heaven as he dies. And he's heard others that he's tried to get to blaspheme that wouldn't. And now he's going to arrest more Christians. But I'm sure there's been some conviction in his heart of the Holy Spirit. And he's been struggling and dealing with what is this really all about. And it's in that moment, as he's going to Damascus, again, that the sun, the light becomes so bright. Of course, we know from his accounts before in 9 and chapter 22 that he becomes blind, and that Ananias has to come and heal him of his blindness. And so here we hear something that we hadn't heard before, and that is that it was the sun that was blazing all around them, and that light greater. And he says we all fell to the ground. So the whole group of them fell, but only he heard God, and he heard God say, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. Now, being in the city, let me remind you what a goad is. Brother Andy probably has some at his house that he uses to get his cows up, right? A goad is a prod. It's something that you would use to poke an animal to get them to move. No, not goat. A goad. Yeah. I know he's got cows. He doesn't have goats. But to get those cows moving, sometimes he's got to poke them to get them to go. And you know what better picture of us and God than that? Is that we are stubborn and won't go where he's trying to send us. and he asked to keep poking us to get us to go. And instead of going like we should, we just kick at the stick that's poking us. We just kick back at God that's trying to help us. And you've been there where you're trying to help somebody or trying to help an animal or something, and but you just can't quite get them to understand that you're trying to help them, and they fight with you to keep you, to prevent you from helping. And so that's what that picture that Paul, that God said, look, I've been poking at you, kind of get you in the right direction. How long are you going to kick against that? When are you going to do something about it? Now, this verse is extremely important to me. You've heard me talk, I think many of you have heard both my testimony and my calling experience. I got saved at the age of 7. It was a very natural thing. I'd been to church all my life. The preacher preached on that Sunday morning, and somewhere during his sermon, I remember connecting the thing, this truth that I knew about God, but I didn't know God. You know, even at 7, I was the little kid that answered all the questions in Sunday school class. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know God. I didn't have a personal relationship with me. And somewhere in that service that morning, that clicked with me. And I began to think about that. And we came home and ate supper, and then I went to my bedroom, and by myself, I knelt down by the bed, and I prayed, and I said, God, would you come into my heart? Would you make yourself, help me know that you're real, and would you save me? And so I did that. I told my mom and dad, so they scheduled me to go talk to the pastor that night, Dr. Jerry Brazil. He looked at me, and he said, well, you need to ask, you're ready to, he talked with me for a few minutes. He said, well, you're ready to ask Jesus into your heart. And I said, no, I did that this afternoon. And I told him what I did, and I told him what I prayed. And he said, well, you're good. That's what you needed to do. And then they scheduled for me to be baptized a few weeks later. Now, that was probably as common and as quiet as it could have been. My call to preach wasn't like that. I believe God began to call me to preach when I was 14. At 14, we had a citywide crusade, and in that year, I led 5 of my teenage friends to the Lord, myself, to faith in Christ. And I believe God was calling me even then to preach. But I told you, Mom was the pastor's secretary, and I saw how he was treated behind closed doors, and I didn't want any part of it. My uncle was a Baptist preacher, and to be honest, I didn't particularly like him, and I didn't want anything like him. And so I just realized this is being recorded, but he won't listen. I just didn't want anything to do it, and I ran from it. And much of high school, I did things that I knew were wrong just because I didn't want to deal with that calling. And then you've heard us, Darlene and I started dating. We never dated in high school, but we started as soon after as we could. And so graduation night, we graduated together in the high school stadium, and we ended up riding around town afterwards, and then the next night I took her to a Bible study at the church, and we began every night that summer to go out and do something together, most of the time just watch TV. But a few weeks into that, I realized that while she had been raised in the Methodist church, she didn't have a genuine relationship with Jesus, and she began to realize that. And in July, after we'd been dating about 2 months, we're at in those days we called them afterglows. That meant an after church fellowship for the youth. And it was a swimming party, and being in July. And we were standing in the swimming pool talking. And as we talked, she prayed with me to receive Jesus. Now, if I would know what I know now then, I would have just baptized her right there. I didn't do that then. But we did go then talk to the pastor, and not long after that, she was baptized. But in that process of her becoming a believer, God convicted me, because I realized, in talking with her, I realized that she had a social gospel, church attendance thing, but not a real relationship. But I also realized that I didn't live any differently than she did. And God began to convict me of the sin in my life and the need for me to live differently. And I think that was the beginning of me re-embracing that call that he'd been calling all along. And so that went on for about a year. Well, I guess that was July. I went on into the fall at LSU, and I went away to LSU, and she was at Southeastern in Hammond, and so we didn't get to see. We didn't have cell phones, so we had to call her on the dorm phone at the end of the hall, everybody walking by, and then it was really expensive, so we were very limited. And so we actually wrote real letters and cards back to each other. And about February of that year, my freshman year at LSU, I went home because we were having a revival at home. And I had talked one of my friends into taking us. We had a, I don't remember what it was, maybe a Monday off or something, and she took me home. Or it was before the weekend. She took me home on the weekend. We were starting revival that Sunday morning, and Dr. Jerry Brazil, the same man who had been my pastor, who had baptized me when I was 7, had come back to preach the revival that week. And he had preached, and I don't know anything that he preached that morning, because the whole service I was arguing with God that he wasn't calling me to preach. And by the end of the service, I had convinced myself that I had convinced God that he wasn't calling me to preach. The service was over, and Mike Moody, and Mike went home to be with Jesus about a week ago. Mike Moody, who was one of the local Gideons, walked up to me and said, "We're having a Gideon banquet next week. Would you come and be our speaker to us?" And I said, "I mean, I'm 18 years old. I'm a freshman at LSU. And why he's asking me to speak to their big banquet, I have no idea." And my first thought was, "God, we just settled this. What are you doing?" And so he said, "Can you come back and do that?" And I said, "Well, let me think about it. Let me pray about it." And he walked off, and Marvin Cantrell, another one of the deacons there, walked up and said, "Next week we're having an RA father-son banquet. Could you come and speak at it and share your testimony?" And I said, "God, we just decided this. This isn't what you're calling me to do." And so I drove back to Baton Rouge, and Monday night, my roommate Chuck was out where he usually was, which meant he was out at the bar, and I was there by myself. And it was pitch black, about 11 o'clock, and I'm just laying there praying and praying, and God's convicting me. And I don't know if you would have heard it. I don't know if anybody else would have heard it. But I heard him say those exact words, "How long are you going to kick against the goads? And he continued to talk to me, and I got out of the bed and got all my knees, and I said, God, no longer. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. And it was as if the room, it was noonday in the room. Now, I don't know if anybody else would have seen any of that or heard any of that, they would have been in the room with me. But that is why I've never doubted my calling, because it was, while my salvation was as quiet as can be, that was my call experience, and that was that phrase. How long do you kick against the goads? And then it was the light, and again, I saw it. I just remember closing my eyes and laying my head on my bed and weeping. And the next day, again, I didn't have a car at LSU, so I had to hitch rides back to Boca Linda. It was 2 hours away. But the next day, the person who was leading the revival with Dr. Brazil was my dad's best friend in high school. His name was Jerry Barlow, and he was a minister of music at a church, at Struma Church there in Baton Rouge. And I called Mom and Dad and told them what I'd done, and I said, I want to come home and make it public tonight at the revival, but I don't have a ride. And so Dad told Jerry what had happened. And it just so happened he had invited a couple from his church to come sing with him that night. And so they came to LSU, picked me up, drove me to Bogalusa. And that night in that revival, I went forward and surrendered to ministry. Now, the other funny part of the story is in those last few weeks, I had been talking a lot with my student minister. He was our minister of music and students. His name is Billy Reddy. You've heard me quote some of his songs and sermons a couple of times. So I'm there, and I come forward. God's calling me to preach, and that was all about preaching. And he's like the first or second person to me in the line, and he looks at me, and he said, I thought we were talking about music ministry all this time. I said, no, I can't sing, Billy. Why would I work with a worship pastor? And so anyways, but that's that story. So that was Paul. There he sees God. He hears God call him and ask, how long? So verse 15, then I ask, who are you, Lord? And he says, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. And the Lord replied, now get up and stand on your feet. I have appeared to you as to appoint you as a servant and as a witness of what you've seen of me and what I will show you. And I will rescue you from your own people and from the Gentiles. And I am sending you to them to open their eyes and to turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to the power of God, so that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. So I'm sending you to people who are in darkness so that they'll have light. I'm sending you to people who are under control of Satan to bring them over to God. I'm sending you that they can have forgiveness of their sin and be sanctified by their faith, be saved by their faith in me. And so that was Paul. He went from arresting Christians to making disciples. That was Paul. That was God's call on his life. to be saved himself and then called to go and preach so that others could be saved. And so what we see here is the promise of what he would come. And of course, reading this now, we know that's what he became, right? But that was the call of God upon his life. And so all of us, our testimony begins with what our life was like before we met Jesus, how we met Jesus, and then what our life has been like since we met Jesus. And it ought to see something happen. And we use this term all the time here at Heritage. What do we say? It's all about life change. Life change. What we were to what we are because of Jesus. And so that is Paul's life change story. And from arresting them to being called to preach so that others could be saved and become believers.